Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the half-year results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, the 24th February, 2015. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Media and Investor Relations Manager, Mr. Haydn Long. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for dialing in today for our half-year result announcement. I'm joined by the usual crew, Andrew Flannery, our CFO, Screw, our CEO, Melanie Waters-Ryan, our COO, and we'll shortly run you through a fairly lengthy presentation that we've unofficially titled 50 Slides of Graham. Before handing over to Flanno, I'll just give you a very quick overview of what you'll read about. Firstly, the result is in line with our revised guidance. We obviously revised that guidance in December, and the result is within that range, underpinned by record global sales and record profits from offshore. On the downside, Australia not as strong as normal, although TTV growth was still pretty good. We continued to build for the future during the first half by investing significantly in the sales network, expanding our product range, and continuing to develop our people. At the end of the half, the balance sheet was in a stronger position than at the same time last year. We had further cash growth and lower debt, which means we're well placed to capitalise on opportunities that arise later in the year and into the future. We're maintaining the full-year guidance, no change to our target, and we're aiming to achieve some accelerated second-half growth. Pleasingly, we're seeing some pretty cheap fares as the golden era for travel continues, and I think Screw and Mel will tell you a little bit more about those later. I'll hand over to Flanno to give you a run through on the numbers.
Yeah, thanks, Haydn. Good morning, everyone. Look, this year, or this first 6 months' results, I think it's fair to say it's a bit of a mixed bag. Some parts of the organisation performed exceptionally well. Others struggled in the first 6 months. So I'll try to give you a little bit of insight into some of those drivers. First thing I just highlight is the TTV growth. 8.8% is obviously a very strong number and a good position to be in. But there were probably three main factors that I'd like to just to highlight there that were probably, once understood, give you a better indication of the underlying trading involvement. So the first one is we had a positive impact of FX translation. So with the Aussie dollar declining, we saw overseas earnings obviously take a slight improvement. The impact on TTV was 1% of that positive translation. The second point I'd make is that in some parts of the world, we receive commission, which we've always booked for hotels that we refer, but we haven't always been able to recognise the TTV. We're now able to do that for most of our geographies, and that's actually accounted for 1% of the movement as well. So no impact on revenue, just reflecting it in TTV for the first time. So that actually gets you to about 6.8% trading, underlying trading result. The other factor I would highlight, which is something that we should celebrate, is the continuing success of the Travel Money Australian business, which actually increased by about $70 million in the first 6 months. That itself accounted for another 1% of the TTV movement. So again, if you were to strip that out, you're getting back to about a 5.8% improvement in TTV, which actually is pretty consistent with our selling staff growth of around 6%. If you want to look at that kind of by geography, Australia's TTV was up around 5%, but if you were to exclude that hotel impact I mentioned before in Travel Money Oz, the underlying TTV growth was around 3%. So for the Australian business, that would have been a reasonably disappointing result, but some green shoots ahead, we think, and Mel can speak to those. It then highlights how well the rest of the world traded. TTV from the rest of the world was up 16% for the same period, so a great result and further evidence of the global footprint that we're trying to establish around the world. On the income margin side of things, we saw a 50% basis point decline. You may know that the majority of our consultants have the ability to decide what they're going to sell our product for. This is done through the commissions and fees that they charge customers. We refer to this as our gross margin. And some of our markets, predominantly Australia and Canada, the consultants saw the need to reduce the gross margin either to stimulate demand, secure a booking, or react to competitive pressures. So the question going forward is whether that decline will continue or whether we can see a recovery in that. We actually think that based on our experience in the second quarter, that that decline has actually stabilised. We have yet to see it get any worse, which is positive, and we actually do think we can recover some of that over time, which is obviously a good thing as well. The other point I would highlight, because I know some of you are interested in this, is a 3.8 FX gain in the first 6 months. I highlight that because it actually reverses what was a reasonably large FX loss last year. And at the time, we mentioned that we'd fully hedged the majority of our positions. So I just want to give you comfort that that is working well for us. The FX gain that we've experienced this year relates to three or four different positions, either payments we know we need to make in the future or payments that will come in that we actually haven't hedged, expecting that the dollar would weaken and we've had the small benefit of that. So not a large number, but it does reverse that large FX loss we saw the first half last year. On the expense side of the business, we continue to invest. A couple of areas just to highlight, because I know, again, you are interested in those. Employee costs went up by 9%. That reflects two things. It reflects the 7% increase in staff numbers that we saw, including support staff. It includes a slight increase in cost because of that FX translation. And it also reflects a $5 to $6 million investment that we've made in the wages for the Australian novices that we've previously highlighted. On the sales and marketing side of things, that cost has actually increased by 10%. It is slightly above the 1.1% of TTV measure that we aim for. It's at 1.15. That slight increase, again, was to reflect the need to ensure the market was aware of the great deals in the marketplace and to ensure the demand was at the appropriate level. I would expect it probably to remain at that level for the remainder of this financial year. So with those highlights, we get to an underlying trading result of around $138 million, which is about 6% down on the same time last year. That result does exclude Topdeck. Topdeck, for the few months that we had it for this period, contributed about $3.4 million. A few things I just want to highlight in relation to that. If we had actually acquired the business for the full year, we think it would probably contribute around £4 to £4.5 million EBIT. So that 3.4 that you've seen in the first period is not really reflective of what you can expect for the full year, because largely the sales come in the first half of the financial years with a lot of cost flowing in the second half. So not a good number to extrapolate, but if you're looking for a proxy for the contribution, you should be using that £4 to £4.5 million EBIT number. The second thing is, I know a number of you will be looking to see where that Topdeck flows through into the segment note. It doesn't sit in the UK segment, as some of you might expect. It actually sits in the other segment. And if you've got any questions about that, we can certainly deal with those offline if you're interested. In relation to the balance sheet, it remains very strong. General cash just short of $430 million. Borrowings now as low as $32 million. And cash flow a little bit better than the same time last year, but that was to be expected with the way that the airline payments were flowing in this first 6 months. With that strong balance sheet, the directors saw the opportunity to slightly increase the dividend in percentage terms from what we've done for the first half of the last couple of years. So 55 cents remains consistent with last year, but is reflects about 55% of after-tax profits. So that's the financial highlights. I'm sure you're very excited to hear all that. For the probably more interesting stuff, I'll hand across to Screw and Mel.
Oh, thank you, Flannett. Now, where am I meant to start from? Here? Give me some of that out. Yeah, g'day, everyone. So just going into some of the operational highlights, we had record sales in terms of TTV in local currency in all our countries, and Flano just told me that now Ireland is actually part of the UK, so that's quite interesting. And we had record EBIT in UK, South Africa, Singapore, China. The States has gone pretty well in this first half, with a reasonable result for its first half. Normally the first half is the difficult period there. And as you see, the EBIT overseas now is up to $25 million for the first half. And this first half, as I said before, in most of those overseas countries, is a weaker half. but obviously that offsets the weakness in Australia. And you'll see some graphs there about if you look at the actual first half TTV overseas and EBIT. For Australia, our sales are up both in leisure and corporate travel. Overall, as Flano said, 5% overall TTV growth. So quite a number of businesses have got good top and bottom line. Corporate TTV topped the $1.1 billion, and profits are in line. There's a record amount of new business won, improved strike rate. So, yeah, we're pretty confident in the corporate market. We've had the Smart Fly. I'm sure a lot of you are on that program, which has been very successful. And we believe that corporate, we can actually continue to grow that reasonably successfully. We've only got a small part of the market. We think about 18% or so with that $1.1 billion. The bottom line leisure results were a bit lower than we'd like. As Flano said, lower margins. Our costs haven't gone away, and sales growth has been reasonably minimal. We've got some opportunities there, as you can see there, with some more vertical integration, which we're doing in product, cost savings, and obviously we want more market share in the Australian market, in leisure in particular, particularly the offline area. In bikes, the Pedal Group JV generated about $30 million in sales, or up 24%, and it's $1.7 million in EBIT, which we think for the full year it'll be $3 to $4 million EBIT profit. Travel Money, again, Flora mentioned this, $2.6 million, and it's one of our fastest growing businesses, I think. We're up to about 70 locations now, and we'll end the year with about 93, I think. And it'll be one of the, about equal to the largest retail money exchange in Australia. So we're pretty happy with that. FCBT, which is Flight Centre Business Travel, which is our small SME business, is up 15% in EBIT, and it's around $130 million in turnover. We don't include that in corporate, even though it is corporate. Stage and Screen and Campus grew at about 20%. So the first half EBIT, where is it? What's this? What's this? Oh, the UK, sorry. Yeah, the UK's been going pretty well. Obviously, the pound strengthening has helped us as well, but it's made just under $20 million, so it's been growing at about 23% in compound. And even the new Ireland acquisition, and despite what Flano and Haydo say, it's actually based in Dublin, so it's not really part of the UK, but it's making quite a good contribution for early days, so we're pretty happy there too. TTV is up 17% local currency, so and we're doing a lot with our product, but particularly our what we call Journeys and Escapes products. The USA is the next one. We're over the $1 billion TTV in the first half, and as you can see, there's significant reduction in the losses there, and we're pretty confident we'll get over the 17 to 18 million US. It should be significantly or somewhat more than that, we hope. So the corporate travel profits are going really well too, so we're opening corporate in Austin and Raleigh means that we've got about 20 US cities now. Most of them are in the corporate traveler brand. Liberty's expanding. We've just opened LA opened last week as a hyperstore in Philadelphia, and I think you can see some pictures there. Pennsylvania and New Jersey opened mega stores. We're focusing more on the Europe program through this Euro Guru. So the rest of the world, Singapore, China, South Africa, all going pretty well. New Zealand, we had growth in TDB, but lower profits. India and Dubai, profits are down a bit, but we're not unhappy there. And Canada, again, strong sales growth, but profit is down, and we're not that happy about that. We've gone into four new provinces in the last 18 months too. You'll see some of the segment country by country in the next slide. So I'll hand over to Mel now, and you might be able to tell us some of the strategies there.
Thank you, Graham. Hi everyone. I'll just go through some of our strategies in terms of particularly our killer theme of our journey from moving away from being a travel agent to being a world-class retailer of travel experiences to both the corporate and leisure customer. The first slide is just a summary of the seven, but I'll go in and just explain briefly in the seven and possibly just highlight some more of the things we've actually done over the last year or things that are imminently about to happen. In essence, though, this strategy is about moving away from being a middleman and being more than just the bit in the middle that's subject to the margin we can command from our supply chain and the price we can get from our customer. So we want our brands and businesses to mean far more than the product you can buy there. And I think we've done a lot on that in across these seven mini themes, if you like, over the last year. The first of those is making sure that all of our brands are specialised and famous for something. And we've been really continuously asking every branded business to answer those three questions about what do they have that's special, what do they know that's special, and what do they do that's special. And just as a point of reference there, in Flight Centre brand, which is our headline brand and certainly our largest in Australia, we've been really focused on developing a widest choice of airfares range. And it's not just about bringing great value products to the market, but making sure we're opening up the customer's eyes to the wonderful world of airfares that exist. For example, our penultimate expert has just given me a business class fare to Europe for under $5,000. Now, having been in the industry for 27 years, that is a killer price. It's a combination of Finnair, and it's actually a flatbed product. And quite frankly, I'd love to stop in Helsinki on the way to London. But a lot of what we're trying to do is make sure that Flight Centre brand is known for that widest choice of airfares and not just the great value deals that it brings to the market. Remembering too that the brand and specialisation is not just about a CVP being a marketing statement, but making sure our customers really know what that brand does for them. And interestingly, we've done a lot of consumer research over the last year, and customers aren't necessarily aware of all the things that we do for them, particularly the looking after them when things go wrong, the 24-hour Australian-based call centre support, et cetera, et cetera. So you'll see us spending more time focusing on those through our marketing channels going forward. The second part of our overall strategy is developing our own product. Sure, we want to have great products from all of our partners, but we want to start manufacturing more of our own. And the year has been, perhaps this has been the one strategy that we've done the most on, with majorly success across most of the products. A few haven't quite worked, but that's going to happen. But I thought I'd just highlight a new one that we're about to launch, which is the Journeys range that Skroo mentioned. The UK have already launched it and will be coming out in the Australian market in the next few weeks, which is essentially some long-haul trips, which are kind of great journeys of the world, where we're putting them in a way that the customers can readily see them and kind of understand them and inspire them, if you like, to travel to those places. So Journeys, watch this space. But then I also wanted to mention some of the successes we've had with manufactured product in our corporate suite of brands. And Skroo mentioned SmartFly, but SmartStay, I think we only launched about a year or so ago. And it's not one that's a value-based unique product. It's actually solving some pain points for corporate customers, where when you buy one of our SmartStay hotel products, you get free Wi-Fi. One of my pet hates when I go to the Sheraton on the Park in Sydney and they don't give me free Wi-Fi when I pay hundreds of dollars for a room. But certainly we've had some great success on those unique and manufactured products. And again, a lot of this is not necessarily about having something completely only for us, but it's about bringing forward the wonderful world of products that are in the travel industry that are kind of hidden in the clouds in the online space at the moment. Our third strategy is around having experts, not just agents. And we've done a lot in terms of making sure most of our training programs, or in fact all of our training programs, are professionally accredited. We're now focused more, though, on expertise at point of sale. And there's a slide there about some of our new London pages on the web, which I'll show you a bit later as well. But it's essentially now sharing that expertise with our customers. And what this slide does, and I think we've done Bali as well, we're about to launch a few more cities, is trying to show customers when's the cheapest time to travel through that graphical format. When's kind of the fastest, most popular? We also have the ability now, you can go onto that website and you can hit various airlines and it comes up with their route map. So again, you can see where you might fly to. So again, showcasing that our expertise, or when they come to us with our expertise, we can find them more and better options. The fourth area on our key strategic focus is around our shops being actually shops. And this is an area we've done a huge amount in the last year. And in fact, looking at the Hyperstore in Queen Street, which I think is about 18 months old now, it actually looks a bit old hat compared to where we've got to. And I was fortunately in Philadelphia in December, January, and saw the brand new Liberty store there. And we've got a couple of photos. There's one of Chermside in Brisbane, which I think now is pretty well our final fit out, where we've incorporated a much more open environment for our customers. We're showcasing our products. We have a discovery zone where customers can browse with or without a consultant some of our offers, and so on and so forth. And certainly the feedback we're getting from both customers and consultants is these spaces are much more retail friendly. I even heard one of our consultants the other day, someone, they nearly fell over backwards when a customer said they'd come in to browse, which is exactly what we wanted them to do, is really open up that wonderful world, or the golden era of travel. We've also got a shop there of our new Escape Travel fit out in Ballina. We're kind of not quite there on this one, still a few design elements we're focused on, but again, really making sure that this shop does more in terms of showcasing our products and making it a much more pleasant environment for our customers and our consultants. Our fifth strategy is around our blended access, which is really about developing online capability for our brands, but essentially making sure that our brands are always open, whether it's on or offline. So again, much has been going on in our websites. I won't go on about that, but there's certainly been a major push into the global space as well, and there's a shop there at the new Singapore website. Websites continue to be the largest and growing inquiry generator for all our brands as well, so we see more and more investment in that space. By the way, one of our increased cost bases in Australia and certainly globally is the increasing cost of SEM marketing, something like 30% increase from about a year ago, so it is a space that you do need to spend money. Number six, we've actually, again, have done a lot in the last year, making sure our information, both customer information and business information, is much more organised, manageable and utilised. And we've had the formation of our CIA, Customer Insights Analysis team, about a year ago. We now have a single customer view across all our leisure brands, so we can see clearly what customers are buying, inquiring from our various brands. And we've certainly segmented our customer database. And there's an example there of now what we do with our campaigns, where we send, for the same campaign, which is Thailand in the example, different offerings, whether you're budget conscious or a leading lifestyle. And what we've seen is much more click-throughs and higher rates of conversion by making sure we get the right offers in front of the right customer database. So more on that space as we move into the next year as well. So number seven kind of encapsulates all the preceding six strategies about becoming a world-class sales and marketing machine. So again, back to our website, making sure that as our website is not really about just online booking capability, but making sure that it's full of rich content, showcasing our products, showcasing our expertise, and I invite you to have a look at the Flight Centre brand New London pages. But I've also got some highlights. In fact, this is not even in the press. Some new press ads we're about to roll out in the next few weeks. I just saw that, Hayter. Which, again, you can see we'll be focusing on our new product ranges of Journeys, Escapes, but in this instance with Flight Centre brand always anchored with the widest choice of airfares. The dramatic shift from our Chinese menu style of advertising, but we think where we need to get to. So those seven strategies continue to be a core part of our plans. As I said, much has happened, and now we're really focused on what's really given us increased revenue, increased opportunity for profit, and cementing that into all our brands globally. So I'll hand back to Skroo to have a bit of a chat about the future.
Thanks, Mel. Look, our outlook, we haven't changed our target, 360 to 390. That does exclude Top Deck, which, as Flano said, should be $8 to $10 million for the full year. The top of the range represents 4%, and to get to the top of the range, we'll need to have a pretty good last 5 months, and it's just impossible for us to be able to predict anything any better than that. but and it's mainly because of the Australian market. It's still a little bit quiet for us. However, the expos, you probably know we run these travel expos this time of the year, and the results have been pretty good. Generally, the takings at the expos have been very solid. The deals that we've got from our suppliers have been fantastic. It's just a slightly quietened market, we believe, particularly in leisure. Corporate's going fine. Certainly, we're growing the market in some areas. We've repriced, for example, our New York hotels, and since then they've been up about 40%. So, and there's still great airfare deals on all the key routes. You know, Europe and North America are going pretty well. So some of the opportunities we've got here, I think there's no reason why you won't see continued growth in our overseas. We're pretty keen to grow corporate in Australia more rapidly. I think we've been growing about 5 or 6% year to date, but we'd like to see that in Australia. We'd like to see that higher. And Mel talked about the wise choice of airfares and the killer theme. So we still believe it's a golden era for travel, you know, despite a few mishaps here and there some of the security issues. But there is no doubt that there's, wherever you look, there's more capacity, more frequency, less stopovers, better product, better pricing. So it's never been a better time to travel, which is positive for us. We're looking at, in terms of growing the network, we are still focused on organic growth. And we've got, as we know, we've got 29 or so different brands in our network. We are looking at the Netherlands. Chris Galanti, our MD in the UK, is learning Dutch. So, and obviously Dublin here is, we're looking at opening a hyperstore in Dublin during this calendar year, which will be pretty exciting. We are looking at a few relatively small acquisitions. So we see these will be tending to complement the businesses we already have, and you'll hopefully over the next 6 months you'll see a few relatively small things that we believe will be important to our future growth, and some of it will be vertical, some will be horizontal. By vertical, I mean it'll be in our within our existing businesses, but another layer. Horizontal means that it'll be either more shops, more countries, or different brands. So that's about the outlook, and we'd love some questions. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, ready for questions, Kevin.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, it is *1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, it is *1 on your telephone. First question comes from the line of Mr. Michael Simotas from Deutsche Bank. Please ask your question.
Good morning, guys. I was just hoping to get a little more colour on your outlook commentary. If I sort of compare the tone of today's release and call with that of what we heard from you just before Christmas, it seems to be quite a bit more buoyant now than what you described back in December. Can you just give us a little bit more colour around what's changed since then, particularly in the Aussie business?
Yeah, Michael, it's Flanner. When we spoke to the market earlier, I think what we were looking at was what the market had actually been doing, so as far as the travel market had been doing for the first 4 months of the year. And growth in the Australian leisure travel market in particular was flat to small, modest improvement at best. What we have seen over November and December, though, is, and we get these numbers after, a month or two after they actually happen, is an improving spend from the consumer on leisure travel. So, a couple of months doesn't make a year by any stretch of the imagination, but there does seem to be some growth coming back into the market, which is encouraging. So, and looking at, what we're seeing, you know, here we are in February and looking at what we're seeing at the moment, that would probably seem to be continuing to flow through. So that is giving us a little bit more optimism than maybe what we had. But as Skroo said, it's still very early to call what the full year is going to be. But there's a few more green shoots that we can see than what we could previously.
Okay, that's good. And then the second one for me, just on the cash flow, it's much stronger cash position that you finished up in relative to what you described back in December. Just wondering whether there are any timing issues there which will unwind in the second half, or whether it is just a better cash performance which will accumulate down the track.
Yeah, Michael, look, I think as we spoke about the full year, when we pay the airlines really does factor into our operating cash flow in a major way. So what we're really seeing here is that, you know, we haven't had to pay the airlines as quickly as what we've had to pay come June. So that obviously has a positive impact on the cash that stays within the business. So, look, I don't think there's anything fundamentally different in our cash flow structure or anything like that. It really just does come down to the timing. The one thing I would flag when you do look at the cash flow is that you will have seen that we've spent more on CapEx this year. Traditionally, we would have spent around $30 million. Now we spent $40 million, so $10 million more in the first 6 months. That really reflects us fine-tuning our Shop of the Future program, where we have been trialing different elements, different footprints, different size stores around the globe. And I wouldn't expect that that amount of spend to continue into the future, because as we finalise the elements, we'll be able to, obviously be able to procure them for a much more efficient sum. But I would flag that as being something worth noting in the cash flow and the reason for that change.
Okay. And in the past, you've spoken about having a buffer of about 3 months of cash OPEX sitting on the balance sheet. It looks to me like you're about there and you'll well surpass that in the second half. Should we expect capital management? Now, I know you've upped the payout ratio a little bit in the first half, but that just cleanly matches the dividend to the PCP. So what should we expect?
Look, I don't think you should expect too much different to what we've said before. You know, the range is 50 to 60% of after-tax profits. Skroo alluded to some acquisitions coming up. And, you know, as we said before, there's some things we want to do as far as investing in platforms to improve our offering to customers as well. So I don't think you should expect any major change from that current policy.
Okay, and then just the last one from me. There's a large franking balance, and there are some other businesses in the market which have released franking credits without changing the capital structure. Is that something that you guys would consider?
Yes, many of your colleagues in the industry have been very proactive in highlighting that to us, mate. So,
I bet they have.
So look, you know, it's something that's been considered, but not something that's on the plan for this next 6 months, that's for sure.
Wonderful, thanks.
Thanks, mate.
Your next question comes from Mr. Ben Gilbert from UBS. Mr. Gilbert, please ask your question.
Morning, team. It wouldn't be a call without a question on currency. Just wanted to have a just understand whether the comments you're making around Australia, around outbound in terms of where you've seen the improvement, I presume so. And just secondly, I suppose you've obviously talked a lot in the past about how you don't think currency has too much of an impact long term. If you think really we're starting to see that improvement after that initial blip from the declining currency, now people are sort of starting to get used to Aussie dollar at 80 cents and slightly higher trips to the US, these sorts of things.
Ben, Mel's going to take this one. What I would say is we didn't really see a massive change as a result of the dollar. We certainly saw a bit of a slowdown in demand across the board, you know, more linked to probably to consumer confidence than the dollar. Mel's got a whole heap of artillery to fire at you now, so
I don't know about a whole heap, but I was going to say we've just finished the round of expos, and I went to the Brisbane one on the weekend, and the number two destinations that were selling far more than aggressively was Europe and USA in particular. So, you know, that would show me that the dollar, I reckon, pretty well what you said, the customers are through the blip and they're just making their plans for the Northern Hemisphere summer. So, in fact, I think there were stronger sales to those markets than in previous years. So there you go. Doesn't seem to be influencing a change in consumer patterns.
Yeah. I think, Ben, people, you know, I think the average holiday maker doesn't really make a financial decision on their holiday. Obviously, that's a part of it, but they tend to go where they want to go emotionally. So they might want to take kids to Disneyland or something like that. So they still go to America. They just either buy more before they go or they downgrade their holiday plans while they're away a little bit if the dollar's a bit weaker. We don't sort of tend to see them switching destinations too much.
And, you know, the main thing, and I think we've said it over the years, is that it's more stimulated by the deals in the marketplace, which is stimulated by the breadth of competition. And there's plenty of competition. And for a key route like the USA as well, you've got a lot of, you know, Qantas, Virgin and various players competing for that segment. So, and again, I noticed that at the expos, the deals were excellent, you know, right through the various seasonality. So, again, I think, you know, that's what stimulates customers more so than, you know, how much they're going to be able to have their spending money perhaps limited slightly. So, yeah, no, it doesn't seem to be doing much on that.
Great. And second one for me, just on the fuel surcharges in the market, sort of, I suppose it's still a bit unclear exactly how that's going to play out, but in terms of if those sort of start winding back or getting rolled into the fares, presumably that's going to be a positive for you guys as well?
Yeah, Ben, it probably is, mainly because I think it's it makes sense, it makes it easier, less complicated and all that sort of thing. The chances are, but that, you know, our margins won't be too affected, so positively or negatively, it'll just make it more clarity. It's probably the frequent flyers are the people who probably will benefit the most, because, you know, the airlines like frequent flyer redemptions, actually including cash on fuel surcharges. So as they come off, which it sounds like they will, from most major carriers, you know, I think it'll be a general benefit, probably more to customers and frequent flyers, but we certainly encourage airlines to do it, but they don't take any notice of us anyway.
That's great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Mr. Grant Siligari from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Thanks. Good morning. Just a couple of questions from me, if I could. One, could you comment on the cost outlook for the Australian business, perhaps over the next 12 months?
Yeah, Grant, look, that is actually a really good question. I guess we've flagged before that we've made this investment in the novice wages, which cost somewhere between $10 to $12 million annually. We've also made some investments in enhancing and making more sophisticated our marketing team. And we've also invested some money in actually building the products that Mel referred to before, these unique exclusive product ranges. So there is a large investment that has gone through. I think it's probably too early to say whether we will be able to find other areas in the business to compensate for some of those investments we've made. That's something we're kind of contemplating at the moment. I know, and Mel might speak to it, we've made some changes in some parts of the business, but they haven't compensated for those additional costs. So, look, I think at the moment, and until we say probably any different, you can probably expect those costs to remain consistent for the next 12 months. But, Mel, I don't know if you have anything more to add to that.
Yeah, you know, some of the cost-saving measures are kind of add up to a bit, but they're small and they're going to take a while to, particularly say some of our new supply deals, et cetera, it'll take a while to come in. But remember too, we also want to invest in our shop network over the next few years and we do see that that's a critical factor to upgrade most of our shops to the new shop of the future fit outs. So the real key is getting more productivity in through our leisure businesses. And a lot of these things, and we're actually about to analyse some of those new travel shops of the future, because more people in a, you know, one real estate location also is more productive. But is it also our marketing, et cetera, helping the consultant to make more sales? So I don't think you'll see, as Plano said, much change on the cost basis as we move forward.
Thanks. And just to clarify, Andrew, when you said consistent, do you mean consistent in terms of rate of growth or consistent in terms of level?
Yeah, consistent in level, mate.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Maybe just another question on the Australian business, if I could, please. You've characterised the commission pressure as, I think, you know, largely around execution and the way in which the consultants were competing for business in the first quarter. I mean, I just wonder whether you could comment at all on the competitive environment and whether you sort of, whether you think there's also been a contribution there from other competitor activities?
I'll answer that. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, certainly if I look at the corporate space, we've had one or two, not necessarily new players, but players sort of increase their activity. And, you know, the fee structure that we can command is certainly being pressured downwards in the corporate space. So it's not necessarily just in the leisure space either, the consultants opting to slightly discount. But, I mean, I think the New York example that Screw indicated, where we have actually on average dropped our accommodation prices by about, I think it's about 8 or 9%, and there's a critical mass growth, which we've actually achieved in that one, and we'll do that on a very targeted basis. And that was due to competitive pressures on the accommodation space by some of the large OTAs playing. So it's broad, but we're targeting particular segments and seeing, you know, if we drop pricing, do we get the growth in the volume? And particularly something like accommodation where the overall margin is good, it's worth doing.
Sure. Thanks, Mel. And just one other question, if I just could quickly, just on the US business. I mean, I think the materiality of that was the actual the change in the trend in the improvement. That was quite positive. I'm just interested in, was that all corporate, or do you see any, you know, to coin your phrase, green shoots in the leisure business, in the Liberty business in the US?
Yes, a fair bit of the improvement was corporate, and corporate's growing quite rapidly, both in TTV as well as profits are growing. But Liberty itself had a quite a decent improvement. It's still, the profits aren't, in the first 6 months, are not huge there. But we're looking at hopefully the second 6 months, both Liberty and the corporate side of it contributing quite nicely. And, things can change. If they have a few good storms and that sort of thing over winter, it can knock things around a bit. But, both in the US and in the UK, we're pretty confident the next 6 months will be quite positive, not only in corporate but also in leisure.
Actually, Grant, if I can just add to Screw's comments, certainly the corporate business in the USA had an exceptional first 6 months. You should be very mindful, though, that one of the benefits of the write-down last year, not that you ever expect to get any benefits from writing something down, is there's about $2 million worth of depreciation and amortization that no longer hits the books in the USA. So that will account for some of that improvement in the first 6 months as well. So just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. All right, I really appreciate the comments. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Mark Bryan from Bank of America. Please ask your question.
Yeah, morning all. Just wanted to extend a bit more on the cost side in Australia, if we can. You gave us some really helpful comments around the changing top line from when we convened in December. But just in terms of cost, it does feel like there's a sort of change in management tone, which is not surprising in this environment. But are you saying around the margin that you'll be better in the second half Australia compared to the first half, but not quite to the level that you got in the second half of 2014? If I remember correctly, your margins in the second half of 14 in Australia were notably stronger.
Yeah, pretty well. That's pretty, you know, accurate, I think. We've already had some slight recovery in leisure, but we don't see it being as high as it was in the comparable period last year. But the other thing, and we are looking at the overall approach to pricing and how we kind of do more central pricing, if you like, to look at margin. But I think what you mentioned is exactly what the outlook we have.
Great, that's helpful. Thank you. And can I just as an extension to that, can you just flag, you talked about January and February starting a bit better. Both leisure and corporate would be up in terms of TTV terms?
Slightly, yes, but it's actually, I mean, we've got 16 travel brands in Australia, and it's kind of a bit hard to make a sweeping generalisation. If you talk travel money, that's well and truly up. Some of particularly the specialised niche brands, and I'm thinking Travel Associates is one that wasn't mentioned in the presentation, has had great top-line growth. Flight Centre brand and the bigger brands, probably you won't see a strong recovery. And it's again, it's a bit. We also have the holiday season in there with Easter and things like that, which gives us a bit up and down movement based on comparables to last year.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Peter Drew from Hunter Green. Please ask your question.
Morning, guys. Wondering if you could give us a bit more colour around
just the earnings outcomes in New Zealand was a bit weaker than I was expecting. Just wondering if I could get a bit more colour on that, and also Canada was a bit weaker. Just wondering what the outlook for the second half for that business is.
New Zealand, probably I think I haven't had a good look at exactly what caused it, but there's certainly Chris Grieve, who came back, took it over about nearly a year ago. He significantly increased some of the team leaders' salaries, so we had a cost went up, and a bit like the Australian Leisure, we just haven't got the improvements. You know, it's been fairly the leisure market has been pretty quiet in New Zealand compared to the previous year, and New Zealand's not as strong in corporate as we are in Australia. So, you know, it wasn't. The slack wasn't picked up by corporate, so it is it's not quite as good as last year. We're reasonably confident, but this next 6 months won't be too bad in New Zealand, but we will see. Canada, the corporate market in Canada is going reasonably well. Good but not outrageous growth. So it's really the leisure area that we're most concerned at, and that's something we're going to be putting a lot of effort in over the next 12 months. It is, you know, it's one of those markets where a lot of the leisure traffic is Caribbean and very competitive, and we just don't have enough of a market to, you know, Asia Pac and Europe, and that's what we're really going to be focused on in the next 12 months. So, yeah, it's not going to be a short, easy turnaround in Canada in leisure, but we're continuing to grow the corporate quite nicely. So, the longer term, I think it will come good, but the short term, it's the leisure's just pulling us backwards there.
Okay, thanks, Screw. And do you think it'll be profitable in the second half?
Yes, we certainly hope so. This is particularly in leisure, both in the US and Canada. You know, these are the seasons, obviously, that it's significantly different to the first 6 months. So, you know, we'd be certainly disappointed. But we don't expect a really big turnaround in leisure in the short term. It's going to take time.
Okay. And just the last one from me, just in terms of the increase in the novice consultant wages, just wondering if you could give a bit more colour around the sort of anticipated benefit from that investment and then what's actually playing out?
It's very hard to say that, but we have some good plans afoot to change significantly the remuneration system that will reward people better. Some of it's already gone in there with higher retainers and that. And over the next few months, we'll be able to tell you, well, this worked or it didn't work. And so, yeah, we are sort of, it is one of the issues in leisure. As soon as things get a little bit harder, which it has over the last probably 10 months, it's how you get, when the consumer sentiment's just down a little bit, how you actually make sure that people can get remunerated correctly for getting the right outcomes. And we've got a few things in play that will happen over the next month or two. And certainly by the end of this year, we'll be able to give you a good indication whether that's helped us or not, Peter. It's a work in progress at the moment.
Okay. And just to follow up to that is, do you think the sort of higher retainer is approach is actually working against you and making consultants more inclined to discount?
Look, not necessarily. I think one of the things we are looking at is, you know, the retainer has to keep up with the market. So that's, you know, in one way, it's reasonably important. But we are looking at having a higher commission rate as well. So putting them both together, I think, will, the only problem is it hits your costs, but I think it also will a higher commission combined with a higher retainer, I think, will improve results, improve sales over the next 6 months. But unfortunately, it's you get higher costs with it as well. So, you know, one hopes it'll go to the bottom line, but that also is about our increasing our productivity through some of the systems we've got in play and some of the things that Mel was talking about before.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot for that, Skroo.
Thanks, bud.
Your next question comes from Mr. Tom Kierath from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Morning, guys. Just a question on the first-time inclusion of that TTV in from hotels or from the hotels you're accruing. If I were to back that out to get an underlying number for the Australian leisure TTV, where would that come out at?
Yeah, so if you look at the segment note, it'll show 5%. If you were to back that hotel reference out, it'd be 4%.
Right.
And of that 4%, just to highlight again, the growth that we've seen in that travel money business accounts for about 1% of that 4%. So if you're looking at the traditional leisure, corporate, wholesale businesses, it's a 3% increase.
Okay.
Does that help?
I just want to get, I guess, a sense of the leisure growth and the 2% number that you've reported. Would that have come out at about 1 underlying?
No, it'd be around that 2 to 3% range.
Okay. And then secondly, just want to, I think last time you said that online transaction growth was kind of 6 to 8% at the full year result. Can you just maybe provide a bit of an update of where growth in the online transactions and click through is?
I actually don't know. Have you seen that number?
I think the shop network has performed better than the online business this year. We haven't had, by no means strong ticket growth online. We've actually seen some of the same trends that Webjet reported the other day with the yield is down a little bit in the online transactions as well.
Actually, that probably is just something worth mentioning. We were interested to see the other day that Webjet, as Hayden said, did report a decline in yield. And when we looked at our online bookings, that we saw that same trend, but we did not see that trend in store. So it was interesting to see that seems to be an online phenomenon and maybe not a bricks and mortar phenomenon.
Right. So the online business has declined then year on year, is that right?
So say that again.
The online TTV or online sales have declined year on year?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thanks guys. Cheers.
Your next question comes from Mr. John O'Shea from Bell Potter Securities. Please ask your question.
Morning, guys. Just two questions from me, if I could. Just in relation to the corporate, obviously you mentioned the record sort of number of client wins there. Perhaps if you could give us some feel around sort of where that's been achieved and whether you're talking wins by a number of clients or what are we talking here. And second, just in relation to your guidance, just a bit of clarity around that. I mean, obviously the back in December, you've obviously told us the outlook then, and you've told us, Flano, the sort of change since then. Does that mean that we should assume that at the bottom end of the guidance kind of relates to the conditions back in December, and where conditions are now is indicative of a better sort of middle of that range, or how do you think we should think about it? In other words, how has the guidance been framed?
Let me answer the first part of your question, John, which was around the corporate wins. We were referencing dollars as opposed to just number of clients, but both of them have been very positive. So hopefully that answers that part of the question. The guidance has been framed with the, I guess, making reference to what Skroo said before, the complete uncertainty that we have when it comes to, future revenues, which we've talked about before, at best, we have 4 to 6 weeks transparency, and that's about it. So from our perspective, there's still a risk that, there's certainly enough economic uncertainty in the Australian marketplace at the moment and the political environment and all those other things that means if that becomes worse, people might pull back a little bit again. If some of these green shoots that we've seen over the last month or two continue, then obviously it could be better. We're comping to a very weak fourth quarter. So the real upside for us will be what happens in those last 2 months of the year. So, unfortunately, mate, don't have that crystal ball, so we've given you the range just to share with you our concerns. Could go one way or the other.
No worries. Just getting back to that corporate question, the part of the marketplace where you've seen the growth, are we talking sort of the small end, medium, large end? How would you describe it, where most of the wins have been?
Well,
there's quite a few in the large space, but then having said that, the growth of our FCBT business in Flight Centre has been great this year, so that's in the very emerging small business space. But yeah, more of our wins would have been in the FCM brand. I think corporate travel is starting to see some wins now. We have had some retention issues with a couple, but to be honest, that was a while ago, and then that comes into this year. Our actual retention this year has been pretty good, but we've just been feeling the impact of sort of, you know, 12, 18 months ago from a couple of losses.
We also, I think, we also didn't win or lost some of the government business, like they call it, the WOAG, but which was probably a blessing in the end, because government business often involves large volume but very low profits. So, you know, I think most of our wins have been good quality wins, people where we can actually make, you know, make a reasonable margin out of, but, which government business is often not in that category.
Sure. Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers, John.
Your next question comes from Mr. Mark Younger from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Oh, thanks very much. This first question, just wondering, again, sort of guidance related, I guess, the improvement that you saw coming through late last year. Are you able to give us a sense as to how you saw the first quarter growth versus the second quarter growth?
Mike, so the comment I was making before is what we were seeing in our market analysis, so what the leisure market in Australia was doing. So to give you some context, the first quarter of this financial year, we would have seen flat to very small single-digit growth in the size of the market. Then it seemed to pick up in that second quarter, as I mentioned, certainly the last couple of months, and it's probably averaging out around about a 4% improvement for the overall period, if that helps.
Okay, thank you. Also, just wanted to clarify Screw's comments about Top Deck doing 8 to 10 million. That's PBT expectations for the fiscal 15 period that you've owned it.
Oh, sorry, Screw and I are looking at each other. No, look, if I can just clarify, Mike, on Top Deck, I think Screw's comment was, I think I mentioned that on a normal annual basis, Top Deck should contribute somewhere between 4 to 4.5 million EBIT, and that's in pounds. So depending on what your exchange rate is, let's say it's, you know, 50, then obviously that's somewhere towards the $10 million mark in Aussie dollar terms. However, that's on a full year basis. What we've experienced this year is we've had the benefit of a couple of months where a lot of their income does come in, but we're now about to enter the period where there's not as many tours going out and costs are much larger. So the next 6 months we'll see some of that 3.4 revenue that we've recognised or profit that we've recognised being eaten into by some of those costs. So it's very hard to say exactly because we're still learning about that business, but I think the contribution for Top Deck for this full year will be minimal, but after that for FY16 and ongoing, hopefully it'll be around that $10 million contribution.
Right. So when you say minimal, you're suggesting the second half could be negative in an absolute sense?
It could be, yeah.
Right, okay.
Sorry, mate, just to clarify that a little bit, some of its busiest trading period is July, August, and we bought it after that period in very simple terms.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question I had was just regarding in the Aussie business, airline capacity and I guess airfares. At a, you know, we're now been below 80 cents for a couple of months. What would you normally expect to happen with regard to international airlines now having a look at the revenues they're getting out of Australia being 20% lower than a year ago? Would you expect there to be much change over the next 6 to 12 months on capacity?
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that does happen a bit. You know, in the end, the prices will be kept, probably will be kept pretty low just from competition, but they may well, some of the airlines, depending on their home currency, may well try to put more seats, more available seats into their home market, you know, particularly in the States. But so there might be a little bit of capacity squeeze, out of Australia, for example, but there'll probably be some benefits from some of the other countries, whether it's in Asia, you know, UK, Europe, or the States. So I don't think it'll, you know, we're predicting the airfare, the competitiveness of airfares will be good, and that there'll be enough capacity, to nearly all seasons, even though the dollar's a bit weaker. I mean, it's 75 to 80 cents. I think the airlines generally still see Australia as a pretty good market at the current levels. So, and, you know, with the fuel price still low, probably for the next 6 or 12 months at least, I don't think there'll be too much of a problem there.
Remember, too, they can manage the yield through the fare bucket. So, you know, and we saw that with, even though the online yields had increased, actually through bricks and mortar, sorry, decreased through bricks and mortar, they've held pretty well, and they get a better revenue from agents, from people.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question comes from line from Gino Rossi from Citigroup. Please ask your question.
Thanks, guys. Sorry, I missed the first part of the call. It's a busy day here, so apologies if someone has answered my questions. But with business doing so well, I'm just hoping I could sort of get a clear indication of how that might skew the earnings. So I'm just kind of wondering what revenue as a proportion of TTV is for business versus leisure, whether that's higher yielding or lower yielding.
So, Gino, income margin you're talking about between the leisure and the corporate businesses?
Yep.
Yep.
Traditionally, the income margin for corporate is lower, but the cost of transacting that business is actually lower as well. So the net margin is probably a little bit more superior in the corporate business than the leisure business. Does that help?
Yeah, no, that's great. And then if you can just remind me in terms of commissions on international airfares, you know, you've got a component of base override and then super override. And, you know, my forecasts factor in some income margin compression, but the risk to that is if I look historically, it's actually been quite steady for Flight Centre. I'm kind of wondering how much is at risk. So if airlines do take capacity out of Australia, I mean, it's flat currently, but there is scope, I think, for capacity to come out. What proportion of your income margin is at risk? Are the super overrides currently around 0.5%, or is it less or more at risk?
Oh, look, that's a pretty complicated question to answer. Look, I think what I've said for some time now is that we've been very happy with the income margin we've been able to work with our partners on, and that's been averaging out around that 14% mark. But I think I've also said for some time now that that was probably going to be challenged at some point, and probably a more realistic expectation over the longer term would be around 13.7, 13.8. Now, we're actually below that at the moment at 13.6, but that was driven by a change in our consultant behaviour reacting to macro circumstance. We think that will probably get recovered at some point. So, you know, if in the longer term, you know, medium to longer term, if you were to model around that 13.7, 13.8, that's probably okay. How that gets delivered to us from the suppliers, though, it's hard to say whether they change in commission, overrides or whatever. It's a very difficult thing to say.
Okay, great. And can you just give me a theory as to why the yield for online did decrease in the last period? What's driving that?
Yeah, not really sure, but, you know, perhaps it's a shift in destination with the online. The interesting thing, too, is domestic yields are also not growing to the same extent as they're growing in shops. So, you know, people aren't shifting to high-yielding domestic fares either. So, you know, it's a bit of a mystery. It could be a lower class of fare or perhaps a shift in the destinational mix. Not really sure on that one.
Great. All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Andrew McLennan from Commonwealth Bank. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I've got a question, firstly, around cash flow. I know you've dealt with this to an extent before, but I just want to clarify something. We've seen a pretty material fall off in your payables, both in the second half of 14 and the first half of 15. So whilst you have had a bit of a swing that benefited the first half, it still is demonstrating that you're paying out to airlines, etc., much quicker than normal. How sustainable are these current sort of payout or payables ratios that we're currently seeing?
Heather, this is the normal BSP payment cycle. Nothing has changed. It just depends on when the payment cycle falls due within the period. So, you know, if your payment cycle is, say, 30 June, then obviously you've just paid out a lot. You've paid out a lot of cash at the end of the financial year. It doesn't build up again, and that flows through your operating cash flow, obviously. Whereas if you paid out on, the, say, the 23rd of June, you've got 7 days of build up of cash again. So what we saw in this period is we had, we paid out less days relating to last year's trade, that sort of period to June 30 during the first half of the current year. And then at December, we had another additional day built up. So there's nothing has actually changed. We still pay the airlines exactly the same way. It just depends on when that payment cycle falls due. And, you know, it's not unique to Flight Centre either. If you look at some of the other travel agents, you'll see exactly the same thing.
And I think, Andrew, just to reiterate that point, the cash that we're talking about here is, you know, client cash with a corresponding liability. So the actual net movement on the balance sheet is, you know, as it should be. So you shouldn't be seeing any deterioration in the balance sheet because of perceived change in payment terms, because, as Hayden said, they're simply not. It's just a question of when we made that last payment.
Okay. So there's certainly been no benefit of paying in advance to your creditors?
No,
it's simply when the payment is due. That's simple.
We'd rather hold on to it for a bit longer, mate.
Okay, no worries. And in terms of the UK, it's certainly improved on a local currency basis at the EBIT line compared to what we saw in the second half of 14. But it's still we're still talking about growth rates in the single digits compared to strong double digits as we saw up to the first half of 14 in the last couple of years before that. Is there something going on to distract from that growth opportunity? Because obviously the TTV growth is still very strong.
It grew 17%
in local currency.
Sorry, say that again, please.
Yeah, it grew 17% in local currency. The only difference is the travel plan business in Ireland.
And if you exclude that, it was 13% underlying. So I'm not sure. Yep. I'm not sure we're looking at the same numbers, Andrew.
No, that's right. So that was TTV or EBIT?
Yep. No, that's TTV.
Yeah. So at the EBIT line, so TTV growth was still strong, but there seems to be some. I wouldn't say margin compression, but there seems to be some kind of slowdown in the EBIT growth.
Yeah, no.
Terms.
You're right. There has been a slight slowdown, but it's only ever so slight in the 6 months, and that's because they've spent a little bit more on sales and marketing, particularly in the online space. But generally speaking, over the last 5 years, you know, we've seen their CAGR around that 24% mark. So nothing substantial.
Okay, so you didn't anticipate that the growth would head back towards the 20% mark, or at the rate it's currently growing?
In EBIT terms?
Yeah.
20% might be a bit aggressive, but we should see double-digit growth. That would be an expectation for sure.
Okay. And I just want to make a clarification around the commentary on the expos. Is that a material contributor to TTV?
We run a series of expos throughout the year. I think there's about 4 events on average throughout the various capital cities, maybe 3. And I think they contribute something in the vicinity of about 7-8% of overall turnover. So they're very important. Remember, we have been doing them for something like 15 years.
Mm.
We've seen declining numbers in attendance over the last few years, but certainly this year we've reversed that trend. At least been flat in attendance, but the sales performance has been good.
Oh, that's good. And so you mentioned that the number two destination was the UK, Europe, was that?
Oh, I said the two places that are booming at that were Europe, UK and USA. At this time of year, you generally get strong booking patterns for nearly everywhere in the world. January to March is a very heavy booking period, potentially not actually sales, but booking period. And it was just interesting to see, because Europe starts in about October, November with an early bird season. You get a second hit now. But we were just pleased to see the long-haul travel space, which is obviously higher yields and higher margins for us generally, was very positive at those expos.
That's good. And so was the growth in those regions ahead of the growth in your expo bookings overall?
Yes. We're still looking for the final numbers because we wrap it all up. I think this think we've got one more this weekend or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what we would expect.
Yeah, by the sounds of things, Europe was well ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Mr. Scott Ryle from CLSA. Please ask your question.
Thank you very much. I just want to follow on from someone who asked a question earlier around the fuel prices and the change in airline behaviour associated with fuel prices. You've made a couple of public comments, I guess, on you know, airlines needing to pass fuel price declines through to customers. You've been a bit surprised at the speed at which that perhaps hasn't happened?
Yeah, look, there's you know, I think you probably heard Alan Joyce from Qantas did say at one stage that they were reasonably well hedged up until, I think, about now or the end of the last calendar year. So, you know, the airlines are no different than anyone else, I suppose. They're trying to get an advantage from when something like the fuel becomes a lot cheaper. And if you're not hedged, you know, well, depending on your level of hedging, it probably, you know, depends on whether how long or how soon you can take that surcharge off or pass on the benefits. But in the end, it's a competitive industry, and I think the overall price will be, you know, determined on by the competitors as much as fuel. And but it does look like, from what we see, most of the major carriers are taking that surcharge off. But it'll probably come back on again if the fuel price goes up.
Sure. So, but in terms of, you know, I agree it's a competitive industry, particularly internationally. But doesn't the fact that they've delayed implementation of some of the fuel price associated reductions in fares mean that, you know, perhaps competition isn't as strong now as perhaps it has been in the last 2 or 3 years? Is that a fair statement, do you think?
Scott, if you look back at fuel surcharges, they very rarely declined anyway. So even, you know, we haven't seen too much change in competition internationally, to be honest. But if you look back over the years, you know, fuel surcharges were really introduced in June 2004. They very rarely went down. So, you know, the competition didn't lead to a fuel surcharge decline, you know, when it was probably a little bit more intense than now, but there hasn't, a lot hasn't changed there.
The overall fare came down, right? So that's all I'm care about is the overall fare, really. So
well, fares are down again now, though, as well. So you are
starting to see some of that come through?
Yeah, and that's been the case. You know, we haven't had an increase in yields for probably quite a few years. Pretty flat over the first half. It was up a little bit in the first quarter and then down a bit in the second quarter.
Okay, and just taking that forward, but given the comments that you make quite regularly that competition is the key driver of your business, I guess all of this is going towards, you know, do you think competition at the moment, given, you know, there hasn't been a hell of a lot of airlines making money in the last couple of years internationally, is it as strong as it has been for the last 2 or 3 years, or have we seen a little less, you know, at the margin competition?
Mel's probably better placed than I to answer the margin side, but in terms of competition, we've had, you know, a little bit of tinkering around the edges in terms of capacity. You've had, you know, Garuda pulled out of Brisbane, I think, from memory, and Virgin Atlantic pulled out of Sydney, but that was only one or two flights a week. Well, you've had people like Hawaiian increasing its capacity out of places like Brisbane, I think Jetstar as well, and also Etihad increasing its capacity. So, you know, on some routes you've had a little bit of movement, but overall capacity has probably stayed about the same, I would have thought.
See, a lot of it depends, too, on what aircraft type they've got available, because some are far more efficient than others. So the Virgin Atlantic pullout was to do with the aircraft they had available on the route that was inefficient and they felt they could divert it to it. So there's a whole load of complexity that they put towards making decisions about what routes and capacity they do have or put into a market. But, you know, Australia last year I think only had about 70 or 80% of all aircraft seats were sold on flights departing as well, so there was still plenty of available opportunity.
Okay. And then I guess the last question I had, it looks like to hit your guidance range, you need the income margin to be stronger in the second half than the first half. Can you just talk me through what, I mean, A, feel free to disagree if I've got my maths wrong, but secondly, you know, what changes in the second half to get you there on that?
Well, look, it could be it could be an improvement in the income margin that would certainly help. But if TTV improves as well, then that's obviously a big driver as well. So, look, I think our expectation for us to hit guidance would be a pick up in transaction volume, particularly in that fourth quarter when it was very weak last year. So that's what we're really looking for.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Amina Somino from JP Morgan. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi guys, great result. Apologies if this has been asked already. I did join the call late, but just on that last question, I was wondering if you have seen an improvement in the income margin in the first couple of months, and I know some of it was pressure on service fees. Have you re-educated consultants to try and, I guess, go with other things to encourage a sale rather than decrease service fees?
Hi, Amina. That's a good question. It's probably stabilised, but actually, it kind of leads into one of the manufactured products that we did launch in October or November, which we've actually kind of created a captain's package, which is almost like our own fee structure to an airfare, which allows you actually some changes with refunds and cancellations, which we're managing on behalf of the customer. And we only just launched that in Queensland, as we've had it going for about a 3-month pilot, and it's been very well received and has actually helped improve the margin in that area, and we're about to roll it out nationally. So those sorts of things, I think, have helped stabilise it.
Okay. And then just on the contribution of Topdeck, again, apologies if this has been asked, but was that contribution always planned to be stripped out of guidance? I'm just trying to ascertain whether it was included in December or not.
Yeah, no, it was definitely intended to be stripped out from guidance, and I think we specifically said that as well. And when we reported our underlying results today, I mean, you'll see that that's the case as well. The reason we stripped it out was because we weren't sure when that acquisition would be finalised, and the months in question were very high-income months for them. So we just really wanted to give the market a clear understanding of what the underlying business was doing, and Topdeck's obviously cream on top.
So that contribution is expected to fall in the second half then?
Yeah, it is, because we acquired the business late in August, and July and August are actually two big income months for the business. So we've missed a lot of the income this year. What we're about to enter into is a period where they don't do as many tours, so their costs are higher, so it's more likely to have a negative result over the next 6 months. So its positive contribution to the group for the full year is likely to be minimal, but going forward, we expect that business on an annual basis to be delivering somewhere between £4 to £4.5 million EBIT. So if you're looking to model it going forward for financial years, I mean, that's the number I would be using in the short term.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. That's all the questions that I have for now.
No worries. Bye.
Your next question comes from Mr. Sam Dobson from Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Oh, hi, everybody. And apologies, I did just join the call as well. Just picking up on a couple of the earlier questions on capacity, certainly the data that we look at suggests that in the first quarter of 16, so the third quarter of this calendar year, there is expected to be an uptick in capacity growth, principally by Etihad Emirates, et cetera, with some upscaling of aircraft. Just wondering if you've sort of seen that come through as yet.
I think Etihad's increased some of its services around the place, but I'm not really aware of the specifics.
Right. Okay. And then just the second question I had was in terms of the I think you said that you've got around 47% of your stores and businesses now outside of Australia, and you know from a TTV and a revenue perspective, it looks as though it's broadly trending in that direction. Obviously, the EBIT contribution is still much stronger from Australia. What's sort of the longer term expectation there? And what should we be thinking?
Bruce, look, I would certainly hope that at some stage in the future, the 50% of our EBIT comes from overseas, but we're still a long way away from that now. But the aim is, and I think we are seeing better EBITs generally, with a few exceptions like Canada and New Zealand this year. But once we get them back on track, my feeling will be, we also want to grow Australia. So, we don't mind if they don't contribute half the EBIT, but we'd certainly like it to be more than, what is it now, about 25% or something. So, get it up to that 30 to 40%, I think we'd be reasonably happy, particularly if we could grow Australia at the same time.
Right. Okay, that's all I have. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from Mr. Warwick Goodman from AAP. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. You talked about volatility in the leisure market in Australia, so I've got a bit of a broad question about that. Could you talk me through the factors contributing to that volatility and how you see those evolving over the next 6 months to a year?
Warwick, it's Hayden speaking. What we saw was, going back a year, pretty much, we had a really strong first three quarters of last year globally, but particularly in Australia. And then April was a bit of a weird month last year, if you remember. We had the Anzac Day holiday, the extended Easter period. So we weren't really sure how that month would play out. But then we had the federal budget, and we started to see a decline in consumer confidence, so April, May, June. When that happened, we saw a real slowdown in growth in TTV and growth in profits in the Australian leisure business. Most of the other businesses continued to perform okay. And, during this half, the first half, we didn't see a massive pickup. We probably thought, we obviously put out an announcement in December, but we thought we'd see more of a pickup, in that first half than we did. We started to see a little bit of an uptick late in that half, but it was just a fairly slow recovery in consumer confidence and, a willingness to spend up on a holiday.
Thanks, guys.
The next question comes from Mr. Roy Toffelson, who is a shareholder. Please ask your question.
Good morning. A couple of questions for Mel, I expect. As part of that unique offering travel retailer strategy that's more truly in place, what type of market segment is Flight Centre targeting with some of the acquisitions that were touched on?
Do you mean acquisitions in terms of business acquisitions or
yes.
Acquisition marketing? Oh, okay.
No, acquisition. You talked about some minor acquisitions. Well, for instance, the top tech type thing, what sort of market segment is it? Sort of a upmarket type one, or which may be higher margin, or just like a travel market, or what sort of markets are you looking at targeting with any acquisitions?
Okay, Roy, actually that's a good question. I mean, the top tech one's a good one because we're actually very focused on the youth market in the next sort of 20 years. We actually have a total youth strategy we're looking at, and we may seek to look for more acquisitions in that space in terms of where we feel there's missing pieces. That would mean that we've got a strong youth offering. Because funnily enough, the youth market seems to be fairly resistant to the ebbs and flows of market conditions. And we do well out of it, not just in our student flights brands, but also in our Flight Centre brand as well. So we are looking at acquisitions in that space. But then the other one you mentioned quite rightly is in, and I'll say it, we're very focused on baby boomers in that market. A lot of the product offerings that we're putting together are in fact designed for more of that audience who, will, spend the kids' inheritance, so to speak. But there's something like 186,000 baby boomers entering the market in Australia every year now for the next whatever period. And they're strong travellers. They often go into the premium end of, aircraft and various accommodations. And it's been a good space for us generally, so we want to get much more targeted on that one. And the other one would probably be corporates again, small corporates or corporate businesses. They're particularly where we see we want to move to. It's a strong, they like to have people do it for them, and, they like to spend, as I said, lots of money on travel. So they're probably some key market segments. What we're doing initially is trying to tailor a lot of that manufactured and unique product to see where it hits the market. But some of the acquisitions are more in the vertical piece where we can then buy the actual... and Backroads, remember, we bought some years ago, which plays exactly to that space, is particularly specialised niche businesses that support those, you know, key markets.
Ray, the other one that we've expanded or that we bought into recently was Buffalo Tours, which is a destination business, ground handling business. So they look after you once you get off the plane, pretty much.
So it's kind of that core package market as well, and we'll look to try and do that in other destinations where we move large amounts of people. It'll take a year or two with Buffalo just to do the logistical stuff of moving, you know, 700,000 people from airport to hotel, etc. But we are making plans again about what they can do in terms of developing far more unique and tailored product as well in those core, you know, resorty markets too.
Right. So you're not actually looking at buying accommodation or resorts or those sorts of things as part of a unique offering?
No, probably the only area we'd look at would be hotel management. Owning assets is, we'll leave that to Skroog on the private side of things with Spices. But no, we would certainly entertain some further vertical integration, particularly into hotel management, and again, particularly to places where we send large amounts of people. And that's kind of got a twofold focus of margin maintenance and or growth, but also helps us control the customer experience we can deliver in those markets. And another interesting one on that is if we do that sort of stuff, our travel money business, I mean, I can't imagine anyone on the call hasn't been ripped off by our, money changer in downtown, Denpasar somewhere. We're looking at those sorts of things where we can put those services as well. Again, to help provide the customers a better and more secure experience, but obviously then there's revenue opportunities for us too.
Right, and just another one. I didn't realise the travel expos were such a significant part of the market in Australia. Given their apparent success, is there any thoughts of implementing something like that in the UK or US?
Well, the US already do them. I think we do them in most parts of the world, certainly the US, Canada, South Africa. UK have been experimenting with the thought of doing expos. I actually think they may be looking at doing one.
Yeah, they do the, not their own.
They participate in the industry ones as opposed to do what we've done here for a long time, which is do our own.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Ray.
Your final question comes from Mr. Tim Plume from CIMB. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Most of my questions have pretty much been answered, but just one clarification, if I may, just in terms of income margins in Australia, following on from Armina's question. You were mentioning that the margins have stabilised. Should we take that as being flat year on year in December and January, or the level of decline is not getting any worse? And given that you did 12.9% in the first half of 15, how should we be thinking about the margins that you are targeting in the second half of 15, please?
The latter articulation was right, Tim. I think when you're saying the decline hasn't got any worse is what we mean by stabilisation. As far as expectations for the next 6 months, 12.9, you know, you could probably go a little 10 basis points above that maybe, but around that percent of, around that level, we're not banking on a huge uptick at this point in time.
Okay. So even though you're comping kind of 13.7 in the second half of 14, going 13.7 compared to call it 13% in the second half of 12, that's still fine in order to get to the current guidance?
Yeah, mate, look, the current guidance, as we've said earlier, it's a combination of things. It's a combination of what happens with that income margin. It's also a combination with what happens with transaction volume. Both of those are very difficult for us to predict, and hence why we've got that range at the moment.
Okay, perfect. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim. See you, mate.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I'd like now to hand it back the call over to your speakers for closing remarks. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, everyone. If anyone has any questions later in the day, we'll be around. We're actually taking off late this afternoon, but be around till about 4 o'clock Queensland time. So give us a call or send us an email. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.